All right. We're just going to jump straight into this. If it's all right with you, I want to go ahead and wrap up Genesis 6. So at this point, we're at the last portion of our discussion. I assume this will take maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and then we'll get into Matthew chapter 12. But we are now in verse 4, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and also afterward when the sons of God came into the daughters of man, and they bore children to them. These were the mighty men who are of old, the men of renown. Okay, so the next question is the Nephilim, right? Who are the Nephilim? So again, view one, these are humans. And this passage may be stating that they already existed before Genesis chapter 6, verse 1. And so we discussed that last week. When you're reading this, we want to make sure that you're not jumping the gun. So again, Genesis chapter 6. And this is something that you brought out as we discussed this passage. Verse 4, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. What would in those days be? When man began to multiply, right? And so we're saying it could be referencing here verse 1. Whenever the sons of God come into the daughters of men. In those days, when this is occurring, the Nephilim were on the earth in those days. And also afterward, when the sons of God came into the daughters of men. And so we're talking about, and also afterwards. Well, what's the afterwards? And that was kind of interesting because on one hand you're going, well, we think afterwards probably after the flood. But then if you're just isolating the verse, it could be afterwards whenever the sons of God come into the daughters of men. Okay, so this with view one, they're simply seeing this as mankind. And now you begin to look at the term Nephilim, okay? Whenever you begin to search this term, and again, I've kind of given you this material, so I'm just going to kind of go through this. You're going to see them mentioned in Numbers chapter 13, 33. So let's look at that really quickly together. Numbers 13, 33. This is in context of the spies that were sent into Canaan. And majority of the spies are fearful to take the land. They say the land, I'm in verse 32. So they brought to the people of Israel a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants, and all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, who come from the Nephilim. And we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them. You're going to read about, so of course here, the sons of Anak who came from the Nephilim. They were reckoned among the Rephaim in Deuteronomy chapter 2, 11, 10 and 11. Let me read that with you. Deuteronomy chapter 2, back up in verse 9. And the Lord said to me, this is Moses speaking to Israel, do not harass Moab or contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land for possession, because I have given Ar to the people of Lot for a possession. The Amim formerly lived there, a people great and many and tall as the Anakim. Like the Anakim, they are also counted as Rephaim, but the Moabites call them Amim. And it's interesting. So what you have is that this is not an isolated event. And many times the Rephaim is synonymous with the Nephilim. But what's the common denominator about these people and the Anak? And you're going to see there also the Anakim. What's the common denominator about these people? They're big, they're tall people. Okay? Numbers 13:22 states that Anak had three sons. We can also tie Anak back to his father Arba in Joshua 15:13, just simply saying like these are beings who had sons and who had a father. Joshua cut these clans off, though there was a remnant left in Philistine territory. So Joshua would fight against these men of great height. Okay? We think that there's probably a remnant of this you're seeing in the Philistine area. Does that ring a bell? Well, you start thinking about David and Goliath, who was from that, who was a what? Yeah, and he was among what people? The Philistines. You can read about individuals like King Og in Deuteronomy 3:11. He had a bed of iron that was over 13 feet long. So, in other words, they're just saying, listen, this would seem to harmonize with what we're reading in Genesis 6. That the Nephilim, and some translations just simply translate it giants, were there before this happened, and they were there after. And what would that be? After what? Okay, now, there, one thing we can't debate, are these people present after the flood? Now, what's a very practical way you could explain how these people, how are giants? Well, I guess I just put this, how do we have giants? How do we have large men, both before or after the flood? Kelly? I know, if it's okay, I know Katie was even, you know, we talked a little bit about that, and, you know, she's not trying to act like the authority on this, but, you know, someone who has a background in biology, she's like, listen, in our world, this would not seem odd at all. So you have this genetic component, you have some people that are tall, and it would also make sense because God ends up flooding the world and everyone is destroyed except for who? And then they have children, and it continues on. And what happens over time? Because it's what? It's in their genes, okay? Now, does that seem far-fetched to anyone? That's a very pretty, very reasonable explanation as to what's going on, okay? One more observation. Oh, and I just put in here too, like, I was just doing a quick search. We have, what was it here? In June, I was researching this. At that time, you had 2,000 to 3,000 people that are over 7 feet tall. By the way, Goliath, and is it the Hebrew text or the Septuagint? There's discrepancies over how tall Goliath was. He was either 6'7" or like 9'7". But I will say this: it does seem to lean maybe towards a man that was even bigger, because whenever you're considering the weight of his armor and his weaponry, that's abnormal. But anyways, I digress. We've got a lot of tall people even in the world today, okay? One more observation I added in here. What would be the point of mentioning the Nephilim? So here's the other aspect. But what's the point of them? You don't get so into the woods that you forget to step back and say, why? Okay, so you think that they're just human beings. Then what's the point of bringing them up? Yes, sir.
Just describing the times. That's what things were like back then. It was a simple world. There were big people and
right.
Nothing more.
And these big, so, and I'll kind of play it this way. What was the reputation of these giant men later on? And as we move forward, what would you say that again? They were to be feared. And so that's why also, did I put it in here? Yeah. They're described, they might be described as mighty men, or sometimes translated mighty warriors. So I put it in here. The implication is that they were violent men of war. We'll read about tall men in biblical narrative that fought against Israel, as I put in here. Take note of, and here's the other thing. Look at this. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 6. And so now we're in... I put 11 through 13, is that right? Yeah. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw that the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on the earth. And God said to Noah, I have determined to make an end of all flesh, for the earth is filled with violence through them. Behold, I will destroy them with the earth. And so the argument on view number one is that when you're reading in Genesis, that it looks like God is looking at who he has created. He's looking at flesh, and he's looking at the idea that they were promiscuous, yes, but that they're violent people, okay? So does that make sense? From view one, everything is adding up, and it makes sense why they introduced the Nephilim. Okay? Yes, sir.
So I don't know if we've specifically talked about this, but in verse 3, it just sort of seems so obvious. It says, the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh. And then also what you were just talking about, it talks about man evil continually. It doesn't say many gods or anything, and it doesn't say the Lord was upset with his angels for coming down here. It says man.
Mm-hmm. And that would be the observation. One translation, my spirit shall not abide, but another translation, I shall not strive with man. And so it has that idea of that, as you're pointing out. Kelly, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Now, here's the other view. The other view answers that, what do I do here? Oh, sorry. To be fair, the other view that does view the sons of God to be a heavenly host, they're not necessarily married to the concept that the Nephilim have to be a product. They do acknowledge that this could also be just a different breed. However, they're saying if that's what we have, here are some observations. Number one, Nephilim. So the Nephilim are of an unknown origin. Some writers have taken the Hebrew word Nephil to fall to imply that the Nephilim were fallen ones. That is, fallen angels who subsequently mated with human women. Okay, I took that from the Baker Encyclopedia of the Bible there. And so what they would say is that, isn't it interesting that the Hebrew can mean to fall? And then also, as a side note, we have these watchers, or like the Enoch, like the fallen ones. We've got fallen angels. You've got the concept of demigods, which was very common in the Near East, Eastern religions. And if you were to ask them, we would say, what's the deal of like trying to, why are you trying to push this? They would say, we want to be accurate. We just for the sake of being accurate. And so what they end up seeing in some of these texts is they think that whenever Joshua ends up fighting against some of these people, like the Rephaim and the Nephilim, that there may be more there that meets the eye there. That what you have is you have this sense of this evil, these beings that are there, and Israel is fighting against them. They see, for example, you and I, when we look at David and Goliath, they see another layer to that. This is David, who Jesus Christ will be the descendant of. They see like a shadowing, if you will, of Jesus going up against the demigods and taking them down. They see Joshua, and if you look into it more, the Nephilim and the Rephaim play more of a part in their history than we have appreciated. And so you're seeing another element of what's happening. Now, here's the rebuttal to that. To fall, the Hebrew, that's true, it can be translated that way, but it also can mean to fall upon. So here's the rebuttal to that. That, yeah, well, if one of those men, those giant warriors, they would fall upon you, it can also be that they're men that take you out. So now we're getting into the play of words. Do you see what we're saying here? That the language itself ends up being at a stalemate. Like, what do we do with this? So we have to refer back to context again. Now, what would be one of the major obstacles that you would see for this view as far as the Nephilim, since we know that they exist later on? Do you see that that could be a problem for view number two? Let me get someone else besides Kelly. Let me hear someone else. What's the obstacle to view number two and that we can read about the Nephilim later? And that is the argument. So the argument is that you read about the first time it happens, but what they believe is it clearly implies then that it had to have happened again. The Bible just doesn't talk about it. If it happened once, it can happen again. So I'm giving you both views here. Yes, Dusty.
But these aren't their descendants specifically in a literal way, and they would say it wasn't a global flood. Or what you have in the first several chapters of Genesis, remember these were things being accounted to the people of Israel during the time when Moses was leading them. That's the idea, right?
Right.
And there's a lot of connections symbolically, not to say they were just They were large men. There's perhaps a symbolic connection back to the events that are being talked about.
Right. And I'm one to where I don't shun all that discussion. You know, I think that it's good, as we discussed last week, do you need to know about everything the near Middle East thoughts and practices? No. But I will tell you, sometimes it's a bit enlightening. Sometimes it gets a little bit more depth behind the passage. And so here's where I'm at, because I think we've had good discussion on this. So I hope you don't feel rushed, but let's wrap this up. Okay. And thank you for that, Dusty. I didn't mean to seem like I was shutting that down. I just don't want you guys to kill me if I'm on another two classes on Genesis 6, okay? So what do you think in general? What questions do you have? Kelly? And because of that, can I go ahead and throw into this along with that then? You know, we already discussed this, like when we discussed the book of Enoch. I think you guys had some really good discussion about how to handle that. Whenever Jude references Enoch, and if it's referencing the work, it doesn't mean that he's giving two thumbs up to the whole body of work. Like, you have to be wise, you have to harmonize. I think we came into agreement, like, for example, the book of Enoch does not become your authority. the idea that most theologians lean one way or another doesn't become your authority. What Josephus says on an issue, I'm just now to your point, you know, read it, but that doesn't become your authority. So I think, would you agree with this? Use some wisdom through all of this. Ultimately, we're coming back to scriptures. Would you agree with that? Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think we have to understand all that. It's interesting. I don't think we should ignore it and say, well, it doesn't matter. We don't have to read that. I think we should read it. I think we gain understanding about the character of the time and about how man was corrupting himself. I think it contributes to that character, even if we don't understand the specifics.
Everything that's going on. If you are preaching, in other words, on Genesis 6, this is probably not where you're going to spend the meat of your time. Because there are other clearer principles that would be good to stress. Okay, do you believe this is... any show of hands, does this seem pretty easy to some of you? As far as the view that you hold, does this seem easy to you guys? I'm really not trying to say... I mean, you may look at this and be like, I think I have a view and I think it's really simple. Yeah.
I could be persuaded for either.
So I'll tell you where I lean. Not that it, you know, just for. So I lean towards them being the sons of God. I went back and forth. I originally have always believed this to be mankind. So the sons of God were just men. And then I began to be persuaded. And by the way, so most, for whatever it's worth, most all of the argumentation that I gave actually came from my own study. And it made me feel good because then whenever I started to read material on the other side, I had the same arguments they did, which was cool. So at one point I'm like, this mankind. Then I'm like, no, I think this is heavenly host. And now I'm back to, I think it's mankind. But let me tell you, I'm still keeping an open mind. This isn't something that I would never come back to. And here's the other thing. Do I think that if we disagree that this affects our relationship in the Lord with or one another? No. Yes, sir.
As it's been said in class earlier, one of the benefits, probably the greatest benefit of all this is reminding us of how to study and how to.
Yeah.
When you take on something like this, like Kelly said, you shouldn't just ignore it, but you shouldn't feel absolutely must reach a final decision. But what I want to share, and I've shared this with Sean, there was a book, I don't like reading books, but there was a book I read years ago, one of these, you know, other sources, right, that you mentioned, called The Genesis Flood. It's about that thing. And it talks about all the things that might have been before the flood, how things could have been different, climate, people, dinosaurs. I mean, Okay, I was intrigued. That's what took me to the book. How you could get all the animals on the globe into an ark. Okay, there are ways around. Okay, but the bottom line is, it doesn't matter. But it should. It's cool. It's cool to learn about stuff, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Very good.
You shouldn't let it go.
No, and I hope you guys enjoyed that study. I hope I like kind of chewing those things together with you. All right, Holy Spirit. Blasphemy of the Holy Spirit. Before we get into Matthew 12, let me just ask you, why are we talking?